Yes. And to build on that, just think about how many people we interact with and how the way that we are affects them. So whether you want to talk about something we know with our very close inner circles, whether it's children or siblings or a spouse or parents or colleagues or somebody that you're behind in the grocery, behind in line at the grocery store. So that ripple effect is really, really something that we can't even, it's not even tangible. It's really amazing.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivke Silver.
And this is Deep, Meaningful Conversations, powered by Town Appliance.
Alex and I wear a lot of hats.
We're both writers.
And speakers.
And so many other things, mothers, wives, friends, and active community members.
We love using our skill sets to bring you the best guests to share their wisdom, perspective, and advice on relevant topics.
And we love schmoozing about the topics that are on our mind, and hopefully yours too. Like one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and talking about the stuff we're all thinking about.
So whatever you're doing while listening to our podcast, thanks for joining us for a DMC.
This 2023 season of Deep Meaningful Conversations is brought to you by Town Appliance, the obvious choice. That means that when you're in the market for a new home appliance, whether it's an oven, washing machine, dishwasher, fridge, or more, think Town Appliance. They're known for their superior customer service tailored for the firm customer. You can shop online. Nationwide shipping is free for orders over $1,000. Or you can visit one of their beautiful showrooms in Baltimore, Lakewood, or Cedarhurst. Town Appliance also offers non-minimum free delivery option, which is available in certain areas. Just enter your zip code on the product page or during checkout on their website to see if you're eligible. And if you're not, Town Appliance charges only a $99 flat rate delivery charge. You can find the link to their website and their contact information in our show notes.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of DMC. We hope everyone had a wonderful Hanukkah. And now it is the Monday after and back to regular schedule. I mean, kind of, whatever it means. It feels like we've been trying to adjust back to normal for a long time now. And I don't know, maybe that's an unrealistic expectation.
I know. When will we ever be back to normal?
Yeah.
And specifically with any, Yom Tov or holiday, there is that week after where we're just, trying to get bedtimes back to normal and work schedules back to normal and our eating schedules back to normal. No more late night Hanukkah parties. We've got latkes and gelt as part of our daily diet. I really enjoy that about Hanukkah, but now it's enough.
It's nice. It's nice when you're in it. Like we mentioned at the end of last episode, we had this interview with nutritionist Esty Asher to discuss food as fuel lined up for after Simchas Torah. That was our plan. And as we're transitioning into content now that isn't specifically focused on the war, although the war is obviously very much on our mind all the time, but we're planning episodes now that we hope can still be beneficial, keeping in mind our new reality that we're all, living with and going forward, our new normal, as they say. Mm-hmm. So while it is post-Hanukkah and quote-unquote getting back to normal eating-wise is definitely relevant, we've also been discussing that taking care of ourselves during stressful times is also extremely important.
Yeah, so let's just stop to take note of something as we just go discuss this. We like to say, quote unquote, getting back to normal.
We're doing air quotes right now, but you can't see it because it's a podcast.
Right. So getting back to normal when it comes to eating. Let's talk about that for a minute. So food consumption and our attitudes towards food is complicated. It is so individualized. But it's still a pretty universal topic when it comes to Yom Tov and holidays and getting back on track. Also, we're totally not here saying that getting back on track means getting on a diet.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And if you want to do that, that's great. But we're not saying it has to be that. It's more how do we reestablish our regular eating routines? And also, very importantly, is there any mindset work? And that's what we're really learning today in this episode, that we need to work on surrounding food to get back to or even get to a healthy place.
Well said.
And just also wanted to mention that some people are always careful with what they put in their mouth, even when Hanukkah comes around, even when Yom Tov comes around. I once had a guest who actually brought her own food to my meal at our Shabbos table. And, I respected that. She's very limited, in the types of food that she can eat. And okay, And then there are, you know, there are others amongst us who just enjoy all those special foods and they don't restrict themselves. So, you know, whatever your choices are, we support that. We respect that. We aren't here to say that one approach is better than the other.
Exactly. Like you said, it's so individualized, you know. I also want to share a little bit more about our intention with this episode regarding taking care of ourselves during stressful times. Like, you know, we've addressed this in many different iterations over the past few weeks mm-hmm. about how we have to take care of ourselves psychologically during this war. Being careful about what we're being exposed to in the media. We can't get completely consumed and not be able to take care of our responsibilities and ourselves. Like, hello, you know? Taking care of ourselves by feeding ourselves properly is really going to be the first stop.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get wrapped up and put that on the back burner. But, you know, if we're not eating properly, that can impact our psychological state too. It's kind of like an important thing.
Yeah.
You know, speaking to myself here, it's during stressful times that we're more likely to not tend to our needs. And sometimes we might even think like, oh, how can we, you know, like, but really at the end of the day, like we have to,
yeah.
It's not like a, yeah. It's like not a want, it's a need.
Yes. Yes. So we've invited Essie Asher, a registered dietitian nutritionist, to join us for the CMC. Now, if her title is making you consider turning this episode off, please stay on. You bet we're going to be asking Essie what she thinks about diet culture. Getting on a diet post-Hanukkah is not what this episode is about. So chill if diet is a bad word in your vocabulary. But what this episode is about is giving us some mindset and perspective shifts to help us deal with any negative feelings associated with our holiday splurging, as well as tips to help us get back to a more balanced everyday eating routine. Also, you'll notice that we talk about post-Yom Tov, which was when we originally recorded this episode. So please swap that out in your mind with post-Hanukkah.
Right, just do that little editing yourself.
Yeah, because that would have been a big, what do we call those, like, crazy edits?
The Franken episode?
Frankenstein edits. Yeah, the Frankenstein episode. So we're not going to do that kind of
brain surgery. Trust that you can make that switch yourself.
Yes. And also, we don't specifically address eating during stressful times during this interview. So please remember while you're listening that you are doing yourself a favor and your family a favor to take care of yourself now more than ever.
Exactly. So let's tell you a little bit about our guest. Essie Asher is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and self-care enthusiast on a mission to help women reach their ultimate health and well-being potential inside and out. With so much information out there, she shares credible, clear, and inspiring nutrition information with women to help guide them towards success in their health and wellness goals. Essie has a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition Dietetics and a Master of Science in Human Environmental Sciences with an emphasis in nutrition. Her approach is kind, positive, and very supportive. Essie has also created nutrition curricula and has taught nutrition in numerous schools in addition to conducting professional development for school staff.
So Essie's approach is practical, positive, and holistic. She focuses on many factors that contribute towards overall health. She not only provides guidance on how and what to eat, but she additionally places a strong emphasis on healthy habits and behaviors that are optimal to reach our ultimate health and well-being potential. Finally, Essie encourages self-awareness, self-care, and self-love, including latkes.
Yes.
So we hope you benefit from our DMC with Essie Asher.
Hi, Essie. Welcome to DMC. We are super happy to have you on the podcast. Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about the work that you do?
Hi, Rifki and Alex. I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Essie Asher, and I am Baruch Hashem, a wife, mother, and registered dietitian. And I absolutely love providing women with clear, credible, and inspiring nutrition information in a loving, kind, supportive, big sister who happens to be a dietitian type of way. And there's a lot of information out there, and it can be very confusing and contradictory and overwhelming. And I just want to give women and girls a big hug and encourage a deep breath and really educate and empower them within the world of nutrition in a very positive way. I do have a virtual private practice where I work one-on-one with women all over the world. I write a monthly column within Wellspring magazine, and I also do webinars once in a while as well.
Nice.
Wow, that's great.
I love how you said positive so many times in that. It's like...
Mm-hmm. No, it's very refreshing. Yeah, absolutely.
You caught me.
Yeah. So, you know, we're curious what the main principles you believe in that guide your work as a nutritionist.
Excellent. I have, I would say, three main principles that guide my work as a dietitian. And what those three principles are is, number one, food is fuel and helpful to us. Number two, flexibility is a key to sustainability. And number three, empowered food choices yield success. So to elaborate a little bit, food is fuel and helpful to us. We can talk about that a lot. And I'll keep it brief for now. If you're interested later, we can speak about it more. But essentially, it's thinking about food in a positive and helpful way, as opposed to something that's restrictive or bad. So we're thinking about food as an opportunity to help us reach our potential and live the best lives that we can. So number two, flexibility is a key to sustainability. That's where we don't want to lose focus of the bigger picture. So yes, we're thinking about a healthy lifestyle. We're thinking about the foods that we're eating. But we also want to make sure that we allow ourselves the space to zoom out and recognize that there's a bigger picture there. Okay, I can give a few examples from clients if that will help illustrate this point.
Yeah, please.
Sure. So first, I have this client, and she shared with me how she goes out for a date night once a month with her husband, and it's really important to her that, well, it's important to her that they go out on this date night, but it's really important to her husband that they go out to eat. He really, really enjoys going out to a restaurant with her, whether it's the ambiance, the different food options, whatever it is, he has verbalized to her that that's something that's important to him. Now, if my client was so stuck on her food choices and being very restrictive, she would maybe lose sight of the bigger picture, which is their shalom bias in this case. Okay. Another example I have, a client of mine had a son who was going through a really hard time. He had a really hard day. And he shared with his mother that he just wanted to go out to ice cream with her. And he was able to verbalize that and share with her how he would feel best supported by her. Whether that meant it was an environment where they can talk about what was going on, whether it was just something that was a distraction from what was going on, but whatever the reason might be, I was so proud of my client and really reassured her that what she did, which she ended up taking him out for ice cream, and not only sitting there with him while he ate his ice cream, but she had, I don't remember if it was a milkshake or whatever her choice was, but they enjoyed together, they were able to bond, and she was able to zoom out, be flexible, and see that bigger picture of being the mother that this child needed at that time. And I just think that that's so wonderful, and it sometimes gets lost in the world of nutrition and food choices, and that zooming out is really, really important.
Oh, I like
and
that.
And then
I could see how like these opportunities to bond with family members could completely get hijacked by like the, but it's not on my plan and I'm gonna fail and I'm gonna relapse from like bad eating habits and da-da-da, and you could just spiral into catastrophizing. But
exactly, you can definitely spiral. And another example that I could actually bring up is how I had a different client who shared with me that on a previous plan that she was on, she went out to eat in a restaurant, and it was connected to, I think, maybe like a birthday party, some big event that involved her entire family. And when she relayed that, it was via Zoom call with a nutrition counselor in a different program, not myself. She was berated and yelled at for going to a restaurant. And I don't even think she really ate much. And it was so sad. She told me there were maybe around 40 women on the call. It was a group call, and she was in tears and really mortified. And it's so sad that sometimes, you're right, it is so easy to get distracted and not be able to zoom out. And sometimes we do spiral out of control, and we don't have that empowerment to be able to keep that control. And that really brings us to the point number three, which I was bringing earlier, which is the empowered food choices yield success. So we really want to make sure that we are empowered with our food choices. And ultimately, we have certain goals. And our food choices either bring us closer to those goals, or they might make it take longer to get to those goals. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure that you feel like you're being proactive and in control when it comes to your food choices. So an empowered food choice could look like this. Let's say you're sitting at a meal and here comes dessert. An empowered food choice could either look like, Okay, I'm going to choose to skip dessert. I think that if I have this dessert, it'll make me take longer to get to my goal. It's just not worth it to me right now, right? So I'm choosing not to have it, but it's coming from a very positive, kind place. The same scenario, you can have a different outcome and it's still a positive, empowered choice. And that could go like this. You're sitting at that meal, you have that dessert come, and you decide, you know what? I'm gonna have this dessert. It looks delicious. Maybe I'm in a different environment than usual. Maybe somebody special prepared it for me. And I'm going to enjoy it, savor the flavor, you know, take it all in, the moment and everything. And then I'm going to move on without the guilt, without spiraling out of control. And both scenarios, there's different outcomes. Either I had the dessert or I didn't, but it's both with a very positive and kind tone. And that's what I really want to have women be able to do and to feel good about it.
What would you say? I feel that when we lack that positive and kind tone, like so often there's just so much baggage with women and food and food choices. And like, I'd imagine like often we may even need, I don't know if you provide this in some way, but like counseling about that, our histories. Why are we saying these things in our mind? Why is that? Where's that negative self-talk coming surrounding food?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And we all have it to a certain extent. Depending on how deep it is and how much it interferes with our daily lives, it might be something that I could work with. It might be something that a therapist might need to work with instead. But it's definitely something that's very real and very common. And that's part of why I am so excited to be here, because I want to be the voice that can dispel the myths and can put the positivity back into nutrition. And this is exciting. We get to be better mommies and better wives and better human beings and closer to reaching our potential because of the food choices that we make and because of the attitude that we have while making those food choices. So to do our best to try to quiet the noise and quiet the negativity, I have a lot that I can say, but I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay, we'll have to circle back and bring it back later. So this episode, we're recording it during the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, but the episode is coming out after the Yantav season, yes, where, you know, regular eating habits have shifted from our usual schedules. It's like a whole month of like different eating habits, and it looks different for each person, obviously. So what are some mindset and perspective tips you can give us when we're like getting back into, you know, the more regular schedule, whether it's like helping people deal with any negative feelings associated with consuming many more calories than they usually do, or tips for helping people get back on track post Yantav? We would love to hear what you have to say about all of this.
Well, thank you so much. I would love to share. So first and foremost, I think that it's really important, like what we were saying just now about these negative, you know, negative self-talk or different negativity and, you know, different voices in our head that we might, or baggage that we might associate with food and food choices. Just like that's very normal, feeling uncomfortable and maybe a little frustrated or disappointed after Yom Tov and eating a lot of calories, maybe eating at different times of the day, much later than what we're used to. Just everything is very much off schedule, and it is completely normal to feel that way. We all experience it, I'm sure, if we're being honest with ourselves, and to just validate those feelings and be kind to yourself and don't be hard on yourself. So completely something that you should recognize is normal and appropriate. On that note, I also want to just put it out there that our goal, or at least my goal, and a healthy and well-balanced goal, is not to feel deprived or restricted, especially on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There are zemiros, Shabbos zemiros, that talks about having special delicacies on Shabbos and enjoying special foods. And there's a concept of Oneg Shabbos or Simchas Yom Tov. And the food that we eat is very much connected to that. And taking it a step further, the food that we prepare, it also has an effect on the oneg and the simcha of our children and our husbands and our families, our friends, whoever we're surrounded by during that time. And it's important to make sure that they have that as well. And then again, bringing in that concept of flexibility and zooming out, we want to be able to enjoy our seudas. Okay. And that being said, there definitely is something great about coming out of Yontif and feeling like, okay, I'm ready and motivated to eat in a way that feels better, and I definitely have tips for that. So I will offer you two tips. The first one, I am smiling really wide because it's connected to what Alex had mentioned earlier, and that is, number one, to shift your inner critic to your inner cheerleader. So we really want to try to make sure that we have this positivity in our mind. And when I work with clients, I tell them that I want my voice to try to become your voice. That this is what's gonna happen. I had somebody share I guess one of these like emojis that move, a GIF or or maybe a sticker or something, and it was like a frog cheerleader, and she was like, "This is perfect for you," and I took it as a compliment with the pom poms and all. But we really want to try to shift that negative tone to something positive, and it's completely normal and just something that we all experience. There is some level of negativity, so to try to, in order to get ourselves back on track or in that mode of a healthier food choices, to try to catch ourselves when we have that negativity and shift it to something that's positive and encouraging. So that's tip number one. Tip number two would be to focus and emphasize the foods that you want to increase as opposed to what you want to limit. So again, the theme of positivity, we want to focus on what do I want to add more of and what do I want to increase, not what do I want to cut or restrict. It's a mindset shift.
Can I ask you there? Is like, would you say restricting is in order at times? Yes, but the point is like, what are we focusing on? It's about increasing the good stuff.
So the question is it sometimes appropriate to restrict?
Right.
So I think that it's all within a balance. So sometimes, like we said before, we want to make sure that if we have certain goals, and everybody has different goals, there's a whole variety, but our food choices, like I say, the empowered food choices, some food choices will get us closer to that goal, and other food choices might make it take longer. So there is that effect. When it comes to restriction, you want to make sure that you're giving your body enough of what it requires. So let's say somebody is consuming way more than what they need, then cutting it back can be helpful, but you also want to make sure that you're giving your body what it needs, because that's very important as well.
Interesting. So anything else you wanted to say about, you know, let's just say practically speaking, like it's a new, you know, kids are back in school Monday morning and I got to figure out what I'm having for breakfast and lunch, but like maybe I'm hungry at the wrong times because my stomach like is like, oh my gosh, it's been like stuffed with all this sugar and all this food for like a week. Any just practical tips in terms of how we actually approach that new day when we're telling ourselves in our minds, like, we're going to be better and we're going to try to, I hate to say the word, we're going to be better, Chas v'Shalom, you know what I mean? But like, we're going to try to get on track. What do we do that day one?
Yeah. And to be intentional about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We want to fuel ourselves to be productive. And part of, you know, some of our goals could be to feel lighter on our feet, to have more energy to keep up with our kids, to be able to be more efficient throughout our day. And certain foods might make us feel more sluggish. So to be very intentional. I can talk more about food as fuel at some point.
Yeah, let's get right into that now. I would love you to talk more about that idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. So that can answer your question a little bit more. So when it comes to food as fuel, it seems simple, right? It seems very intuitive. We know deep down, it might be, you know, covered up with other messages, but deep down we know that the food that we eat, or maybe we don't, and that's okay. I will tell you that the food that we eat essentially is fuel that is allowing our body to work the way that it does. Of course, it's all from Hashem, but within Teva, right, within nature, we need to eat in order to fuel our bodies. So very often we get messages about food being, you know, harmful. You know, you hear it being labeled as good or bad, or we restrict, or, you know, there's just this very confusing messaging. And sometimes we come to think about food in a negative way. So we want to come out and really think about the positive way. And it's not that, oh, I cheated because I ate a certain food. Okay. We want to try to kick out that negativity. So the concept of food as fuel helps us recalibrate and train ourselves to see food as something that helps us. So before I started and worked, before I started with my private practice, I worked for a healthcare organization in St. Louis called BJC Healthcare. And it's a really big healthcare organization. At the time where I was working there, they had over 15 hospitals, tens of thousands of employees, a very big presence. And what I did is I was on a team that did school outreach, which was really cool because you hear about doing community outreach, but we were actually in the schools that were within a certain radius of our hospitals. And I was on a team, and myself and a couple other dietitians would create and implement nutrition curricula to then go in and teach kids K through 12, different classes, different curricula, depending on what was age appropriate. We also did professional developments for teachers and coaches and therapists, and it was really cool.
It sounds very cool.
But it was amazing. It was really wonderful. And why am I bringing this up? Because one of the things that we would do when we would go into the schools, we had a class where we would teach the students about the different food groups, and we would teach them what each food group does for our body. So what is their function? It was really cute. Even the younger grades, we had a motions game. It was like Simon Says style. So we would say the food group and they had a motion connected to it. So what would we do? One of the things we would teach them, for example, would be, you know, carbohydrates or grains. Okay, so carbohydrates, what they do for our body, thinking about food as fuel, is they give our body energy. So they give our bodies energy to be able to run around and be physically active. They also give our mind, our brain energy. So they help us focus and think. And if you've ever heard of somebody on a very low carb or no carb diet, they usually have this brain fog. They're really tired. It's all connected because our food is our fuel. And carbohydrates give our body energy. We would even say, you know, grains, because that's how, you know, that's how the USDA, they have grains on their My Plate. And the kids would run in place. It was really cute. But we really tried to give them that message of what these foods are doing for us. So when we think about food as fuel, we can think about, for example, grains giving our body energy. If we take a step back and we don't think about food as fuel, and we're just absorbing these messages of, maybe you've heard this before, but I've heard carbs are bad, avoid carbs, low carb, no carb. It's like this villain in the world of food. And it's so unfortunate because they're great. They help us. They give us energy. But what it's great to do is to take that information and then strategize and use that to help us make those food choices that will best work for us. So if I were to ask you, at what point in the day, and I don't want to put you on the spot, mm-hmm. so you can say pass, but at what point in the day does my body physiologically need the most energy? Mm. What would you say?
First of all, I love it when our guests ask those questions.
Yes,
there are just like a few handful of them that do, and when they do, that's awesome.
When do I need energy?
Oh, gosh, all day.
Physiologically speaking. Let's think about it. Yes.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking like...
I get two answers. They both are, you know, very valid. But
I feel
one
like
is more
I get
right
very
than,
like slumpy in like the afternoon right before the kids come home from school. And that's when I would like an energy like mm-hmm. boost. I'm usually good mm-hmm. through like the morning. I wake up. I feel fine. I feel great. Mm. And then the afternoon, I'm like,
very common.
Yeah, I can relate to that, but I definitely lose my energy like at night, at bedtime. Like my children's okay. bedtime.
Right. Not like the adult bedtime.
Which is a problem.
When does bedtime end, by the way? Because I'm like, I don't know. As kids get older and it gets later, it's very hard.
I know. Now I have like a bunch of teenagers, and the answer to when is bedtime, it means after I go to sleep, they go to sleep.
Right. Okay, so excellent. So we definitely have different times throughout the day where we feel like we need the most energy. But I'll tell you and put it into, you know, from the physiological standpoint, the time when we need the most energy and we have the most of our day ahead of us would be in the morning time. So yes, the afternoon, late at night, usually that's we really have that drop and we need mm-hmm. something to help us. And that also could be affected by the way that we're eating earlier mm-hmm. on in the day. Oh. But you guys are amazing and I am totally there with you. But to take a step back, and if we think about the beginning of our day, right, we have breakfast, literally break fast. We've been sleeping for however many hours, hopefully a decent amount, because that's also related to our health. But in the morning, we have the most of our day ahead of us, and we also have the most opportunity to burn the fuel that we're actually putting into our bodies. Hmm. So when we take a step back and we think, okay, food is our fuel. I am educating and empowering myself by learning about food as our fuel. For example, carbohydrates give my body energy. I might need the most energy in the beginning of the day. Yes, I need boosts throughout. You need to make sure you're stable throughout the day. But when I, as a dietitian, as Esty Asher, right? Because all dietitians, you know, there's overlap, but there's also differences in how we practice. But when I recommend that the biggest and largest serving of carbohydrates that we eat should be during breakfast time, now all of a sudden it's making sense to me, right? I understand food is fuel. Food is helping me. So if I have a larger portion of carbohydrates in the beginning of the day, when I have the whole day ahead of me to use the carbohydrates, to use that energy, and to have that help me, I now feel like I'm a lot more motivated and it makes a lot more sense and it's just a lot more positive. So that's an example of how I use food as fuel. So it's that education, that empowerment, hopefully from a credible source, because like we said, there is a lot out there. And it's taking that information and using that to best benefit us. And when we can clear the noise and look at the facts, then it also just makes it so much more pleasant and empowering and motivating and just wonderful and smooth to eat in a way that best benefits us.
Right. It's like demystifying it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not just eating it because it's tasty or we have like a pleasant emotional association with something from our childhood. I'm talking about you, Wacky Mac, but like, well, not my childhood, but my kid's childhood. And, you know, but like to make more informed choices. I was actually just thinking that I remember hearing once that Chazal say somewhere that it's good to start your day off with bread. So like even Chazal is saying that like you should have carbs in the morning.
There is a concept about washing for breakfast.
And do you have insight in terms of what type of carbs, like the bagel versus the overnight oats, you know?
Right. Are all carbs created equal?
That's right. Probably that's not the question.
Excellent. So that's a big question. Are all carbs created equal? Certain carbohydrates will help us feel more satisfied and will be more beneficial to our health. So usually the whole grains, they help with our heart health, they help with digestion, they help stabilize our blood sugar levels. So if you think about the anatomy of a grain, we can get a little technical. You have an outer layer and you have an inner layer. And well, there's like three main different parts, and this is off the cuff. Hopefully I'm remembering the terms correctly, but you have the bran and you have the endosperm and you also have the germ. Mm-hmm. So the outside is the bran, right? That's the part that has the fiber. When we strip that off, then it, instead of the grain looking darker, it looks lighter. Okay. So that's one part. You also have the endosperm and the germ. So if you take out, and I hope I'm not mixing up the terms, so maybe I should just not say the terms, but if you strip off the outer layer and you also take out part of what's inside, you're essentially taking off the fiber, which is what helps with our heart health and our digestion and help keeping us satisfied and throughout the day with our blood sugar levels. And then there's also an inner part that helps with providing really healthy fats for us. And you're left with just this like soft, empty, not really very beneficial part. So when we have the whole grains, you have everything intact and you have all of those benefits. When you have something that's like a white flour or a white pasta, we're not calling anything bad. Mm-hmm. We want to be done with that. Mm-hmm. But we want to recognize and acknowledge that it does not have the benefits of what the whole grain has. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you can't have it, but if you have, you know, a breakfast that has something with a refined grain that's not whole and you're still feeling hungry after, there's a handful of things that we can look into to see what that reason is. But it, one of the reasons could be if you shift to a whole grain, you'll feel better after. And of course, we're speaking in general terms. There are sometimes there, this whole podcast, we're speaking in general terms. Sometimes there are medical conditions where certain foods are, you know, you have to be very careful or you have to eliminate for medical reasons. Right. So it's always advised to speak with your physician for your specific case. But yes, this is in general terms.
Right. Oh, that's great. It's super helpful.
Yeah, I love it.
we've definitely talked about mindset already a lot, which I'm loving. Like when you were talking just now, I was like, it's not bad. It's just going to take you longer to get to your goal.
Right. Yes. And it's not bad, yes. But you're just not getting the benefits.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
It's very just good. Have to know what you are and are not getting. So this mindset is something that you emphasize. And I would love to hear more examples of how we can translate it into practical application.
Yes, I love it because we want to be practical. We can be all theoretical and abstract, but if at the end of the day we can't put that into practice, it's not really helpful or beneficial to us. So we're all about being practical. So when it comes to translating mindset into something that is practical, I like to think about encouraging women to think about their why. So when we zoom out and we focus on our why, it automatically positions our mindset towards something more positive, excited, motivated. And there's so many different types of whys people could have. When I work with women one-on-one, this is kind of a spoiler alert, but during our first session, before I even talk about nutrition, right? We're not talking about food, we're not talking about nutrition, anything yet. And I ask this amazing woman sitting virtually in front of me, what is her why? Why do you want to embark on a healthy lifestyle? Why do you want to make choices that are more beneficial to your body? Let's zoom out. And the answers might start off a little bit more basic, a little bit more surface level, and we can dig deeper and see that there's so much depth to our why. Hmm. And I'll give an example that can help illustrate this. It's not a nutrition example, but I think it's a good job. It does a good job with illustrating the point. Okay, where we can have the same activity, but a different mindset, and it makes it an entirely different experience. So let's talk about making challah, right? Homemade challah, wonderful. Store-bought challah, also wonderful. Whatever works for you, right? So I used to make challah, and my intention, my why, my reason for making challah was so that I can have a stash in the freezer. I can put it on my Shabbos or Yom Tov table. It's nice. I could think about how I have homemade challah. And that was that. And making challah can be a very daunting task, right? It's wonderful and amazing. I'm not saying anything bad. It's a beautiful mitzvah. And at the same time, it can be a whole day event and a lot of steps and trial and error and a lot involved. So it can be very overwhelming for women, okay? Now, in the past, I don't know, maybe 1 or 2 years, My why shifted without myself realizing this when I would say the tefillah during Hafreshes Challah, the Hibratzon. I think it could be around the time when my Hebrew was improving and I started understanding more about what I was saying. I became very much drawn to saying this tefillah. It really resonated for me. You know, to be able to say, "Be'az ehiya kilu naladati mechadash, nikiya mechet ba'avon," right? I'm reborn, I'm fresh, with no sins. Exactly. Especially going into Shabbos, I could feel like, okay, maybe I can have a fresh chance of being calm and patient and a better mommy or whatever the million things that I'm working on. But instead of my mindset being, I want to have a stash in the freezer, it became, I want to say this Yehi Ratzon. Please let me be able to say this tefillah. And I want to say all of a sudden, but it's not all of a sudden. It's a transition. Making challah is now something that I very regularly do. I mean, of course, Bli Neder, it's not every week, but very often on Erev Shabbos, I'm making challah. And it's not as overwhelming as it used to be. It's a lot more smooth of a process. And I'm using the same recipe, the same, you know, ingredients, the same everything. But what has changed is my intention and my why and what's drawing me to do that. So similarly, when it comes to a healthy lifestyle and our food choices, we can have one intention and experience eating that way, one way, or we can have a totally different experience. And I absolutely love when I'm working with women and their why evolves and we add to it. And that session number one, then we might have a list of one or several things that's their why. All of a sudden, there's these unexpected surprises, pleasant surprises that come up that further their realization of why this is beneficial to them. I can give you a few examples if you're interested in hearing.
Sure.
So I can give you a handful. So I have one client right now. As we're recording this, you said it's a Aseret Yemei Teshuva, so we're approaching Yom Kippur. This will be aired after, but I have a client that I was working with a different year, and she was sharing with me, she messaged me right after Yom Kippur, and she was like, "You're not going to believe this. I am a terrible faster. I am always in bed. And this Yom Kippur, not only did I feel great, however great you can feel when fasting for that long, so I was not in bed, and I made it to shul for Ne'ilah, and I stood for the whole thing." Mm. And she was so excited, and her family couldn't believe it, right? So when you're starting and embarking on a healthy lifestyle, you're not thinking, "Oh, maybe I get to stand for Ne'ilah," right? And everybody's in a different, exactly. Everyone's in a different experience. So I'm not saying, you know, that that's going to happen for everybody, but I have another client who would have to divide up her housework into several days. To mop her apartment, she would have to, you know, it would take her a few days. She'd do room by room. And after, you know, changing some eating patterns, she had more stamina. She can, you know, do that more efficiently. Somebody else was able to be ready for the mikvah much sooner than she had been in over 10 years. More regulated cycles, clearer skin, more, you know, energy, and just, you know, feeling lighter on your feet. The list goes on. And just because one person experiences one thing doesn't mean that, oh, you know, you should have these high expectations. But you can be very surprised with what you can experience. And when you recognize that, that really helps bring everything together when we talk about mindset.
It sounds like such a practicality. Ripple effect, you know, like such a real ripple effect that it can have far-reaching consequences, that positive consequences that you wouldn't even possibly consider. It's so interesting.
Yes. And to build on that, just think about how many people we interact with and how the way that we are affects them. So whether you want to talk about something, you know, with our very close inner circles, whether it's children or siblings or a spouse or parents or colleagues, or, you know, somebody that you're behind in the grocery, you know, behind in line at the grocery store. So that ripple effect is really, really something that we can't even, it's not even tangible. It's really amazing.
That's so cool. That's so interesting.
I also really appreciate what you were saying about, you know, having a why. Each person's why is going to be different, but having a why is so motivating. That's what motivates us, is when we have like a goal and a vision, right? A purpose for what we're doing. And it could be, like you said, I want to fit into this size, you know, and no judgment there. Or it could be something,
100%.
You know, like I need more energy during the day and I want to relook at my food choices.
100%.
Or I'm making a simcha and help. I don't like the way I feel in my body.
many factors, so many, and we reasons. Are going to accept all of them in a non-judgmental way.
With positive cheerleading. Exactly. We're going to be cheerleaders.
Yay, inner cheerleader. You can do it.
Okay, we are back with some more information for you about Town Appliance, the obvious choice. So installation, you know, it's one thing to like need an appliance, then to buy an appliance, but like the appliance has to come to your house and someone has to hook it up. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when we got a new dryer, like that dryer has to be hooked up to all sorts of things. And actually, whatever, I did not use, this is before I knew about Town Appliance, and I used something else. They didn't hook it up right. And then like all this like hot air was going into my laundry room. And I was like, it's like a sauna in here, but I don't want it to be a sauna. I want it to be a laundry room. So I was like, if I had called Town Appliance, it would not have happened. Anyways, the question when we order a new appliance is, what about installation? Who's getting it in the door? Who's unpacking it? Who's installing it in your kitchen or laundry room or wherever? Town Appliance Office offers various options on basic hookups, removing packaging materials and removing freestanding appliances in certain areas, because the old appliance has to come out before the new one can go in. You know, you can't just have like two fridges there. That would be so awkward. To check if these additional services are available in your area, simply enter your zip code at the product page. You can see the pricing options on delivery and installation page of their website. And of course, you can always feel free to give Town Appliance a call and speak with one of their helpful customer service representatives. You will find all that information in our show notes.
Okay, so Essie, I'm sure you've, you know, studied many approaches to, you know, adopting a more healthy lifestyle. What approach do you feel is most helpful for people who are motivated to take that first step?
An approach that I find most helpful for people who are motivated, and I love how you included motivated, because that's a really big factor. And we have to motivate ourselves. That's something that comes from inside. So I love how you brought out motivated. An approach that I find most helpful for people who are motivated and ready to adopt a more healthy lifestyle, in my experience, includes two things. And that is an approach that is simple and proactive. Okay, so what does that mean? I'll first explain what's not simple, right? Labeling foods as good or bad, not simple. Having a restrictive food list, not simple. I mean, if it hasn't become clear, I don't like labeling foods as good or bad. Mm-hmm. Okay, but let's say we did that, not simple. A restrictive food list or other lists you have to try to keep track of, not simple, right? Calorie counting, measuring, weighing, all not simple and tedious and time consuming and overwhelming and a lot of other adjectives that mm-hmm. we can describe. So there's many different ways to break down food into different categories. What I like to do for simplicity is to divide food into three different categories. And then instead of having a specific meal plan, I like to recommend a general meal pattern for simplicity's sake, right? So now we're thinking about three different categories. And depending on your meal or snack that you're talking about, I would recommend two or three of those categories in different proportions. That's it. So that's the simple part.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, please.
Yes, I can. Okay. I'm trying to think how much to say, how much not to say.
Mm-hmm, I get it.
yes, but I would love to share. And it's just such an honor to be here. And I want to help the audience and ourselves, right?
Because we're doing this for us, Esty. Exactly. So we just want to invite everyone to listen. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I'm here to help. And I would love to share as much as I can. So what was the question again?
An example of what does it look like for meals of like the different food categories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. So I'll bring breakfast up as an example, since we already had that whole fun and exciting running in place when I say carbohydrates conversation. So I'll bring up breakfast. Okay. So the three categories that I like to break foods down into would be carbohydrates, vegetables, and protein. Okay, it's a lot, it's more complex than that. And, you know, we can definitely schmooze about that now, or, you know, I can tell you how to reach me. But an example of how I might make a recommendation would be, let's say, for breakfast. Okay, breakfast time, I would say very simply, okay, pretend we're working together. I would say, take a piece of paper, write breakfast, and draw a circle. Okay, you have a circle with a line down the middle. You have two parts of your plate. That's your plate. Whether you eat off of a plate or a bowl or a lap, whatever it is, try to think about it as two halves.
Or a steering wheel.
or a steering wheel. Always be careful. Drive cautiously. so you want to have, for breakfast, I recommend to have half of your plate be carbohydrates, right? That's a larger amount because that is the time of day when we have the most ahead of us. We need the most energy. Right? So half of your plate would be carbohydrates. And then the other half of our plate, we want to make sure that we're having enough protein. Because another spoiler alert, part of what protein does for us is it helps us feel satisfied. So we want to make sure that we're getting the energy that we need. And we also want to make sure that we're feeling satisfied. So we need both in order to best benefit us. Can you get more simple than two halves of a circle?
No, I love this. Right? And I'm thinking like avocado toast with a poached egg.
Exactly. Yes.
This is amazing.
Yes.
But it may not fit literally for all of us who take things very literally. That yes. You've got it all smushed together on the plate, but like if you spread it out, it would be half and half, right, Esty? Is that okay?
Exactly. And again, we're not into weighing and measuring. Uh-huh. So it can be, you know, we're thinking ballpark. Right? We want to be flexible. We want to make sure that regardless of where we are, whether we're in a restaurant, at a simcha, I have a client who did amazing on an El Al flight. I don't know how, but she was able to stick with our plates even during a, you know, international flight, exhausted with, you know, how limited, you know, mm-hmm. choices can be. So we want to make sure that we're thinking general picture mm-hmm. for flexibility, sustainability, and to not get too bogged down by the details. But yes, it's very, you know, to be literal is great, and it's also great to clarify that mm-hmm. right. It doesn't need to be exactly half and half, but just the general idea.
We get that flexibility.
I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yes, flexibility. Yeah. I really like this because I'm a visual person, so I love looking at food visually as like your plate is your canvas, and then mm-hmm. putting it on there. But I really have a question. Like breakfast, okay? I like don't really want to eat, sort of have to eat. So like yes. I'll get my coffee and my milk is protein and like grab a cereal bar. And I know that's too carb heavy and all that. But what happens if people are like, but I don't want avocado toast. I don't feel like that kind of food. That's like not... you know, not appealing to me or appetizing to me at any particular part of the day. Like, what would you say? Just like go for it and train yourself to like the food?
A great question. A really great question, because I also don't feel like we should ever force ourselves to eat. Yeah. It's not like, and this is again with the flexibility. It's not, you know, we've heard, maybe you haven't heard, I've heard every 3 hours eat for your metabolism, or you're doing something terrible for your body, or, you know, follow this specifically, regardless of how your body feels. No, we want to make sure that we're listening to our body and we are also respecting ourselves and our taste buds and our schedule. It could be that I'm not able to sit down for a breakfast ever, or maybe I'm not able to have a breakfast or something more substantial till, you know, 10 o'clock once I'm done with drop-offs and, you know, quickly answer emails and maybe dive in, whatever we do in the morning. So I definitely would not tell you to, you know, just make yourself eat something that you're not interested in. And that's where we can get creative and think what might fit the bill that would be appealing to you, that still gives you that energy that you need in the beginning of the day. I mean, I, off the cuff, I could say something if you'd like, but you know, we can also.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you're not into something like an avocado toast, which some people love, some people not so much, you know, or eggs, something that could include
protein.
Oh, I
love it. I will eat that, but I'll eat that at 11:30 in the morning.
Yes, and exactly. So, and that can be one thing. One idea could be, you know, let's say most of my clients will have breakfast and then a snack and then lunch. Uh-huh. Sometimes we might say, let's switch it. If you're not hungry for breakfast, first of all, it might mean if somebody's not hungry for breakfast, we can look at their eating habits. Maybe they're eating a little bit, not you, but maybe somebody else is eating too late at night and they're not hungry for breakfast because maybe it's good to taper off, right? As our day winds down, we have less need for that energy, right? We might need mental energy. We might need more sleep. We might need a lot of things. But theoretically speaking, as we're closer to the end of our day, we have less of a need for energy to consume. And we also have less opportunity to then burn off that energy. So if we're eating later on in the day, like later on at night, depending what we're eating, we might not feel hungry for breakfast in the morning.
Interesting.
So that's one thing to consider. Another thing to consider could be, have a snack and then breakfast mid-morning.
I like
There's
that.
No rules,
that's
right?
Good.
We're flexible.
Yeah, I like that.
And just to say that we're going to be creative and think of something maybe like a smoothie. You could have fruits are a carbohydrate. Most people don't know that, but fruits are a carbohydrate.
Sure, that is.
So let's say you had like an almond butter or peanut butter, protein something swirled into a yummy frozen fruit smoothie. So there you have in your cup, half your cup, or not so literally, because, you know, the nut butter could be more dense, but like theoretically speaking, half your cup could be, you know, the frozen fruit, which is a carbohydrate, and part of it can also be that protein.
So that's great. Yes.
And
milk.
You can get creative.
You know, that counts.
Yes.
Stick that in your smoothie.
Milk that's counts. Great... Milk has protein.
Yeah. Great ideas. Thank you.
So interesting. And I find like I have coffee. I don't know if this is going to resonate with a lot of our listeners, but I have coffee first thing in the morning. Yeah. And I remember reading once that like I shouldn't actually have coffee first thing in the morning because it is an appetite suppressant. And then I'm not hungry until I'm like really hungry.
I hear that.
I was going to say that coffee is an appetite suppressant. I happen to be, Hashem made me very, very sensitive. It's something I'm working on, but I'm also very, I question a lot of the words that I use. I was worried if I would have said appetite suppressant, somebody would be like,
It's not a PC word.
Let's use that in a
something.
Different way. Right. No. I don't want anyone to try to suppress their appetite. So yes, you're right.
I didn't even think about that.
No.
Like
you
if
didn't
it's
staff
guy,
I
drink
nothing.
Coffee in the morning so I don't eat breakfast or whatever.
Right. It's not like, I'm hungry. Coffee.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, some people really do that. Some people live off of coffee. Like lunch is a latte. You know, it's not, not a great thing.
And I love coffee. And Rivki, I hope you're right. I hope I didn't say anything that here I am the sensitive one. Did I just say something that made you feel that? Hopefully not. Okay, good.
You were going to say you're sensitive to caffeine or something.
Yeah, that's what I
thought. I don't even know if my body like knows that it's caffeinated or decaf.
I also,
it's just, like, it doesn't really work anymore. I drink plenty of coffee. And I also, sometimes you need it first thing in the morning because like we said, before you're actually sitting down and eating something, sometimes you need that boost and that's great and wonderful. And there's nothing wrong with that. That being said, think about, I would suggest that whenever we have this, you know, I try to stay away from like these like trendy terms, I don't know, food rules, right? I would say to challenge like if you hear of something that could be like a food rule, like don't drink coffee first thing in the morning.
Interesting.
There's nothing wrong. Dietitian here saying nothing wrong with drinking coffee first thing in the morning.
Interesting.
It is important, like inner cheerleader, thinking about what we can focus on. It is important to make sure that we're drinking water as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe if somebody has a hard time drinking water, they know they need that coffee. So they'll say, okay, fine, I'll drink the two cups. If I don't let myself drink coffee until I have the two cups, if it's coming from a place of love and I'm trying to encourage my hydration levels, then fine. But don't think that there's any a rule like that. Nope. Dispelled. You can have coffee first thing in the morning.
And also coffee's high in antioxidants, right? There are a lot of studies about the health benefits of coffee. But I will say also, I know my father was like a health nut since the 60s. So like, you know, amino acids and Bragg's amino acids. I mean, I grew up with that on my kitchen table, like before it was a thing. But
you
anyway.
Teach me stuff too.
Not that I live my life like that, even though he was an amazing role model, but I'm like, but I admire him and respect him. But I will just say, like, he always taught me, and that's something that I always continue to do from his lessons, is you're fasting overnight. So what do you want to break your fast on? You know, and to always wake up with a big glass of water to flush your system.
Oh,
through.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes. Break fast. Breakfast.
Break fast. Exactly. Yeah. So maybe, anyway.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. All right. I just got totally sidetracked by this. Yes. Are you?
I also got sidetracked.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. I said simple, right? We're talking about simple.
Oh, that's right. We didn't finish. Proactive.
Yes. And okay, good. I'm glad we
circled
back. Remembered that. Because I think that, it's a circle back because simple is really important, right? And like we were saying before, hopefully this is all something that's tangible and practical and we can take home and be like, wow, I learned something. And at the same time, we want to make it very practical and very tangible. So that's where the proactivity comes in. So when I say being proactive, I'm talking about being proactive with having the foods that you want to be eating readily available.
Oh, yes.
So let's say, for example, So let's say, for example, somebody wants to have, you know, more fruits and vegetables throughout their day. So an example of being proactive would be to wash those fruits and vegetables and have them already in your fridge. By the way, a great tip is to have them at eye level, right? Out, not in the hidden in the drawer, out and appealing.
Those drawers.
And ready to grab. So it's just as easy to, the healthy choice is the easy choice, right? It's just as easy to grab that fresh piece of washed fruit as it is to grab the handful of pretzels. And there's nothing wrong with pretzels, but if we really want the fruit, we're just too tired to wash it, then there and ready for you. And you'll be surprised at, you know, if you have kids or other people that you're living with, the fruit and vegetables that are pre-washed might disappear much quicker than you anticipate.
Yeah. And those people cut them up and put them in the Tupperware, so they're like easily accessible.
No, I noticed that the days when I put the fruit out or the vegetables out on the table for the kids as an after school snack, they do eat them. They do.
Oh my gosh. Such effort.
Yes.
Not when you buy a bag of baby carrots and just put it on the table.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So can I just pick up on what you said about the effort?
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that we're being practical and kind to ourselves and realize that there's a range of what does this mean to be proactive. I can sit there and wash the lettuce and cut up all the vegetables and have them in Tupperware containers ready for the week. That could be proactive. Or it could just be rinsing the apples and putting them in a bowl.
Yeah, we can
do that. So you can choose, you can choose what works for your schedule. And something, it's so important that we try to think about something that's sustainable. And it's a matter of taking those steps forward instead of jumping and trying to reach too far and then not be able to keep up with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say
that. That's great. I also just want to put out there that there's an additional step that we have to be organized, that we went to the store and we shop for these things and they're in our refrigerator. And I do just want to say that for like some of us who have experienced that frustration where it's like, oh, we're hungry, but I'm late on my shopping and I never got it done. Or I really should have these ingredients in the fridge, but whatever it is. And like that sometimes does happen, that like just we're not on schedule and making sure that our fridge is supplemented and stocked.
Totally. That's a hard feeling.
Yeah. And that's okay. And there's also, in addition to something you would find in your refrigerator, there could be other options that you can stock your pantry with that would still be you know, fit the bill as something that could be a fruit or a vegetable or something that's like a more of a balanced choice. So
yeah,
like whether it's like something in the fridge, you know,
like that, or like
having the quinoa, yeah, having the rice, like having it all there so you could just
Yes, exactly. Or even just something that's in a can that you can just take off the pop top and that's it. You know, baby corn or hearts of palm or, you know, if we're thinking about protein, you could have tuna packets or, you know, the possibilities are endless. But yeah, the quinoa is also a great idea.
That requires a pot.
It just takes a little more time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we do have to have kitchens. Yeah, it's funny. I had this experience just yesterday. I don't know, for some reason, my 11-year-old daughter and my husband and I started watching Chopped Motzei Shabbos. And we've done that in past years, but we just like totally forgot about it for many years, and we've reinstated that minhag from Alava Malka. Anyway, but it was a fast yesterday, and I was making like a crustless omelet, and the frozen broccoli was like a little mushy, like it wasn't working, and I'm like, oh, I have a bag of spinach in my fridge. And I'm like, oh, I wish I had mushrooms, or I wish I had canned this and that. And I was like, if I had the Chopped pantry at my disposal, I could really whip up some great stuff. But I'm like literally like finding whatever remnants I have around my house. But yeah, I think it is important to like maybe just go through the pantry and be like, what are these items that like I really should always keep stocked at hand? You know, we'll eat healthier if we have them.
And to you can slowly build that list. You can brainstorm with your family. You can brainstorm with friends, and to also, you know, take it easy and not feel like all of a sudden I need to have a whole Chopped pantry worth, which is also wonderful and could be, you know, the dream of, you know, somebody trying to think what's for dinner. So to just kind of, exactly, to tune in with yourself and see, okay, what's practical for me right now in this life stage, in this time of year. It also, you know, the way that we stock our kitchen, the way that we prepare our food can also vary based off of, you know, the circumstances around the day, the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The size of our pantry.
Yeah. Also true. The storage space situation. All right. Let's talk a little bit about diet culture. There's so many. I'm like curious to hear like what your take is going to be. I have a feeling. I know. Maybe, but maybe I'll be surprised. I've had so many friends over the years and myself, you know, tried this, that, or the other, the newest thing, try this, try that, intermittent fasting, Whole30, like whatever. And I would just love to hear, what is your take on all of that?
So I'm glad you said you like when your guests ask you questions, because I would love to hear your thoughts too. But oh gosh, I can answer first.
We can have a whole episode on this topic.
Right? I know, it's such a big topic. Yeah. It's such a big topic. And I feel like it's a little tricky, because I feel like a lot of times when I hear people talking about the term diet culture, which is hard to find a real definition, by the way, right? I feel like a lot of times there's a lot of frustration and anger and just like, why is it like this, you know, feeling. And I really want to try to focus on what we can do, right? Focus on the positive and how we can empower and educate ourselves. And if we can do that as individuals, then maybe that can turn into a community, and that can turn into, you know, a bigger wave of awareness. But with diet culture comes a lot of fad diets, right? Rifki, you just mentioned a handful. And however many that there are today, there can be that much more tomorrow. And we, you know, talking about that job that I had before, when we would go into the schools, this is something that we talked about with the students, especially in middle and high school. So on the one hand, it could be tempting. Okay, Esty, you're a dietitian. Let's go through all the fad diets there are. Tell us about it, right? So that could be beneficial, but then when we think about how the diet industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, and how tomorrow there can be so many more diets coming out, right? And it's from anybody can come up with their own fad diet, right? It's everywhere. So what I love to do is to help teach people about identifying red flags for fad diets.
That's great.
So thank you. And myself and my team at BJC, really, you know, they get a lot of credit for that concept. So I want to make sure to give credit where credit is due. But I love to continue to teach about that. So with our goal being eating in a way that's healthy and well-balanced for us, when we know what a healthy and well-balanced diet looks like, we can then identify the red flags if there's a diet or program telling us to do something, and it's a red flag saying, hey, this is not healthy, this is not well balanced, right? And I'm not here to tell you what to do, right? You are an adult, a young adult, and, or, you know, whoever our listeners are, and you make your own choices. But at the end of the day, I love to empower you and to give you the confidence to navigate this loud and confusing world, especially of fad diets within diet culture. Okay, so I'll go through five. Okay, we'll go through five red flags of fad diets. So when you see any of these, any of the following that we'll discuss, consider that to be a big red flag for a fad diet, saying this is not something that's helpful or beneficial to your body. And why I love doing this also is because so much time, again, talking about diet culture, there's a lot of talk about diets and weight loss. And did you hear about the latest thing, or I'm trying this, or, you know, you hear it everywhere. And that's just what it is. We're not saying it's good or bad. It's what it is. And, you know, the awareness hopefully can shift that conversation. But this can also empower you and give you the confidence not only for yourself, but let's say, you know, a child comes to you and says they want to follow this, or a colleague or a sister or, you know, anybody. You can also now feel, instead of feeling like overwhelmed and intimidated, you can be like, wait a second, that's a red flag. I know, and I can feel confident to tell you, you know what? You decide what you want to do, but I heard from a dietitian that this might not be the best for your body, okay? Or you don't have to give me any credit. You could just say, I have an inkling that this is not this is not helpful, okay? So red flag number one would be eliminating a food group, right? We spoke earlier, we gave carbohydrates as an example, but all food groups are important. Again, we're speaking overall, general, healthy, you know, population terms again. But all food groups have a place within what is necessary for our body, right? Our bodies are complex and complicated. We need a lot of different nutrients, and by having these food groups, they're providing our body with something that it needs. So if there is a diet or a program that says absolutely cut out or severely restrict X food group, maybe, you know, carbohydrates usually is the one that's depending, you know, sometimes they say fats, sometimes they say carbohydrates, it could say anything. But if there is a diet or program or person that tells you cut out this food group, then that is a red flag because it's depriving our body of something that it needs. Okay, so that's red flag number one, eliminating a food group. Red flag number two would be having a restrictive food list. So I am here to tell you that all foods fit into a healthy, well-balanced diet. So, and when I say diet, I mean a way of eating, right? Our diet is what we're eating. It's not a restrictive set of rules. It's what we're eating and drinking throughout the day. So all foods fit. Yes, some foods might make it take longer to get to our goals. Some foods might help us get to our goals more quickly. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a program that says this list of foods is forbidden, not allowed, restricted, that's a big red flag. Okay. And it's negative. It's not fun. It's not flexible. It's something that we want to make sure that we can stand up and say, no, that's not true. I can have that, right? The cliche, everything in moderation. It's really true. So that's number two, having a restrictive food list is a red flag. Number three would be inadequate amounts promoted, right? So we brushed on this earlier when talking about restriction, and we were talking about making sure that our body gets enough. We want to make sure that we're giving our body enough of what it needs, you know, enough calories and protein and hydration and vitamins and minerals and nutrients. The list goes on. But I'm not going to compare our bodies to cars, but I'm going to use this analogy to bring the point home, right? So let's say we have our car, right? We put gas in our car to be the fuel. We're putting food in our body to be the fuel. Right? Our food is our fuel, giving us what we need to get through our day. The gas we put in our car to get us to our destination. Let's say we don't put enough gas in the car. Either one of two things can happen. Okay. First, we might not get to our destination. We might just break down and that's it. Tough. Sorry. You didn't put in enough gas, so you didn't get there. Okay. So maybe we're not going to be able to get through our day properly, or you know, we're not going to be able to do what we need to do because we didn't fuel our bodies. We didn't give ourselves enough. It's not adequate. Or we might have that car with not enough gas. We might get to our destination, but whether we realize it or not, whether we see it right away or it takes longer, we're doing damage to that car. Okay? So it could be maybe we're not giving our bodies enough, and maybe we're still getting through our day. We're getting through, we're making it. But we could and very possibly will be doing damage to our bodies, whether we realize it or not, whether we see it more immediately or it takes a longer time to recognize that. So if you have a diet or program that's having inadequate amounts promoted, then that is a big red flag. Okay, two more. A requirement of products. Absolutely, under no circumstances should you be convinced. And the advertisements are very convincing, right? We study psychology, and there's advertisements using a lot of different techniques. So it's easy for us to be convinced potentially. So there's nothing wrong with you if you are convinced. But I'm here to tell you, you do not need any products in order to live in a healthy and well-balanced life. So bars, shakes, prepackaged foods, okay, sometimes they can be helpful. They can be convenient sometimes. There's nothing, you know, we can talk about nutrition supplements. It's a whole other category. They're not really regulated. We're not talking about supplements. I'm talking about like a bar or a shake or prepackaged food.
Meal replacement. Okay,
sometimes they can be, yeah, sometimes it can be helpful. Let's say I need to grab a protein bar to help me, you know, because I didn't have time to pack a snack or something like that. Okay, fine. They can be helpful sometimes. But I shouldn't be told that you need these products, okay?
That's
we won't even get started on, yeah, exactly. We won't even get started on pills and all that. Yeah. It's like, it's really sad and scary. And, you know, a lot of times they might store your credit card information and charge you every month. And yeah, it's just unfortunate. So putting that out there, you don't need any requirement, any products to be required. Okay. And then red flag number five would be a rigid set of rules with little flexibility. So we are busy. We are, you know, our lives are, there's intricate, there's things that come up. We have, you know, simchas, and we have a lot of different things that come up, that yamim tovim and Shabbos, and a lot of things where we require that flexibility. And if you have a diet program that is very rigid, and you need to be weighing and measuring things and cooking things in a specific way, and you need to show up at that wedding smorgasbord with your Tupperware container of the foods that only you're allowed to, you know, the only foods you're allowed to eat, or you stress out about is the food that I can have going to be at this event or not? I don't know what to do. You know, it's very, very, it's not necessary, and we need the flexibility. So if we have a very rigid set of rules with little flexibility, that's something that we want to be staying away from.
Amazing.
Yeah, very helpful. And I do just want to clarify, those are rules when it comes to fad diets, but not for someone who is in a has a medically necessitated diet, gluten-free, low FODMAPs, et cetera, correct?
100%. And there's a lot of conditions out there. Yeah. It's not always black and white. There's gray. And that's why it's always good to consult with a dietitian or a physician to make sure that you know what's best for your specific body.
Great, great. All right, well, Essie, finally, do you have any book recommendations for our listeners who want to explore some of the topics that we've discussed today on DMC? We've discussed a lot.
So much.
Yes, we have, and I loved it. I'm loving it. Mm. As far as a recommendation, I actually have a magazine to recommend, and Great. It is called The Wellspring Magazine. It offers current, relevant, and accurate health information with an emphasis on balanced and holistic health. Shifi Friedman is the editor, and she's amazing, amazing. I also happen to write a monthly column for that, and I would definitely recommend the Wellspring Magazine.
Is it the kind of thing that we live in Cleveland? We don't find it here in the grocery store. So if I like subscribed, would it come to my house? Is that such a thing?
I believe so. You can do a search for it, and they have a website, and the information should be there. And if not, I'm sure there's a place where you can ask for help.
I did. Yeah. I went on their website when, you know, when we were talking about you coming on the podcast, I went and I like looked at the website, and it's stunning. It's like a gorgeous magazine. I definitely was very impressed. And
great
intrigued.
To know about that.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's really a treat to be on the Wellspring Nutrition Advisory Board as well. So we have a great team over there.
Nice. Well, Essie, I'm so sad to be saying goodbye, but we have reached the end of our DMC. But before you go, do you have any final thoughts that you would love to share with our listeners?
I do. And I definitely want to be saying thank you so much for having me on. It has been wonderful and amazing. I love this DMC. Mm-hmm. I hope that our audience will benefit as well. And I would love to end off with a bracha, if I could.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
That we should all, we collectively, us and our audience, should Amir to Hashem, take care of ourselves in a way that enables us to reach our potential and help positively impact our loved ones as well.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you for that.
Love it.
Oh, so one of the things that I absolutely loved about the conversation was just like the positive tone that Essie just brings to it. That it's like, it's not this heavy, you know, like she said, like it's not restrictive. It's like this beautiful, like how can I use this bounty that Hashem put on the world to be my best self? It was like this whole mindset shift. And like, I loved the simple and proactive method that she uses. And just like that idea of like, what is your why? Like, why do you want to do it? And then how sometimes your why will evolve as you see the incredible benefits that can happen once you start getting more into being mindful about what you're putting into your body. Like, I loved the examples that she gave. It was mm-hmm. like, exactly. Like, no, I don't think the woman who started working with her was like, I want to eat healthier so I can stand at Ne'ilah. Mm. I just thought it was such a powerful example. But because she had been changing the way that she ate, and she got this amazing health benefit that she couldn't probably have even imagined when she started on her journey. I loved that. So it was mm-hmm. very motivating for me.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Some of the mindset shifts she shared, which I found valuable, is the goal is to increase, not restrict.
Yeah.
Right? Not to feel deprived. You know, that's really important. Because when you start feeling deprived, oh, man. Like, that's when it gets
really
hard. Then
all you want is the thing. It's exactly. like in parenting. When you tell them they can't have something, then that's all they want. Like, don't play with that friend. Oh, that's the only friend on the map. Like, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah, and that ties in very much to her, like, red flags with fad diets. Because so much of fad diets is about that deprivation. And that's not sustainable. That's a key word.
Yeah, sustainability.
And also having meal patterns, not plans.
Yeah.
Right?
And the great visual that you liked.
Yeah, I like that visual. I like, you know, of course, her very important advice to just have the foods that you want to be eating readily available. And in our, you know, our mindset work, just for us to be that inner cheerleader and not the critic. So, and I think these are just really helpful and just usable, simple, proactive ways that we can start thinking differently about how we view food.
Here's this episode's takeaway. The next time you reach for a food, think about your why. And pay attention to the thoughts going through your mind about the food that you're about to eat. If you find yourself being critical, switch to being a cheerleader.
One last shout out for our DMC yearly sponsor, Town Appliance. Town Appliance is the go-to appliance store, having served thousands of customers since 1979. You can visit their beautiful showrooms in Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore, and they also ship. You'll get the same personalized customer service they're known for, whether you shop online or call, and they'll walk you through the process step by step to meet your appliance needs. Visit their website. And if you're in the market for a new appliance, Town Appliance is the obvious choice.
If you want to get in touch besides via social media, you can email us at dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review Deep Meaningful Conversations. We love those reviews. We love feedback. And you can do this subscribe and rating wherever you get your podcasts. See you next episode.